Hello and welcome to Pop a la Carte number 14.
Close.
15, shit. It's because I looked at the top of my page and I put a second one on the same page. That was what I screwed up. Anyway, I'm Valerie.
I'm Tatiana.
And I'm Angela.
We have like 20 topics that we came up with for this week, so we're not actually sure how many we're going to get to. So it's going to mostly be a surprise this week. You're just going to have to listen. Except that I can tell you that at the end of the podcast, we're going to have our very last interview from the cast of Versailles. And this is, I think, my favorite one. Not to say anything bad about the other ones, but I really like Jessica Clark, who plays Princess Palatine, who's a new character in episode 2 of season 2 of Versailles. And she's really fun. You'll see. Anyway, so we'll do that at the end. But we're going to start with reboots, because there's another one coming. We've just found out that they're making another Men in Black, although that's kind of been on the table for a while.
Yeah.
I think they've talked about it, like hemming and hawing about it. Mm-hmm. But it looks like we definitely, I mean, there's a date. It's May something of 2019.
Do they have a cast for it? Or is it?
Nope.
Huh.
And as far as I know, none of the original cast will be in it. It's going to be more like a Jurassic World kind of thing, it sounds like, where they're taking it to a more global kind of threat as opposed to, you know, just New York City, I guess.
Not that I thought Jurassic World was good.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do a reboot, I think that is the way to do it, to just not make it a recreation of the previous film, but to actually sort of tell a new story with that universe.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I think you could take the basic premise and go in different directions, and that's more interesting than, like, we're remaking this movie.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just sad, though, because, like, I don't know, especially Will Smith is, like, he is those movies, and it does feel weird. Whereas the Jurassic Park movies kind of, I mean, I guess you kind of had Jeff Goldblum.
I was going to say, Jeff Goldblum's all I remember.
But he wasn't in all of them, was he? I don't think he was in the third one.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Which wasn't a good one.
But right. That's there you go. Without Jeff Goldblum, what are you doing?
Yeah, I know. Don't make it. And then just Jurassic World sucked, and he wasn't in that. Right. So there you go.
I was going to say.
But I see what you say, though, because when you think of Jurassic World, you think of a lot. But when you think of Men in Black, you think of Will Smith. Like,
yeah.
I mean, as good as his playoff with Tommy Lee Jones was, like, Men in Black was Will Smith's charisma.
Yeah,
for sure.
So.
I was going to say that one set of reboots that I think are good are the Planet of the Apes ones.
Yeah.
And that was a version that sort of took it, like, let's go back and let's, like, deepen the story and, like, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like the originals just sort of start you on the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
So.
Because it did the opposite of the, you know, because that's a big shocker moment of the first Planet of the Apes. Mm-hmm. The original movie is the, oh, God, it's actually Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's. Whereas this one was, okay, it's Earth, you know it's Earth, and this is how it happened.
Right.
So, yeah.
And I like that because it sort of plays on, like, what you already know, because, like, obviously you know Planet of the Apes, so
yeah.
A movie that's made in this day and age is not going to shock you.
Yeah, seeing the Statue of Liberty at the end again would just be like, yeah, whatever. We know that one. Even if you've never seen the movie, you've seen the picture.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how I feel. I mean, I love science fiction. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a big science fiction household. We're surrounded by all my dad's science fiction stuff as we record every night. and so, I mean, obviously, like, any science fiction makes me happy, but I don't know. I feel like I want something new. But
no,
I totally agree with that. I will say, apparently the writers are going to be the same writers for the original Iron Man.
Interesting.
But they also did one of the Transformers movies, so,
oh,
you know.
Oh, okay, so half and half. Like, you don't, it's a mixed bag, it's a mixed bag.
Yes, so it may be a good thing, it may not be a good thing. We really don't know.
I definitely agree with that feeling of wanting something new, for sure.
Yeah.
And not that you're always going to get something good when you get something new. Like, you could get Jupiter Ascending again. But.
Yeah, I still never saw that.
At the very least, it's nice to know that writers, and it's not even the writer's fault, obviously, but, like, that someone has taken a chance. Mm-hmm. On a new property or on a new idea.
Yeah.
If you have two bad things and one of them at least tried to have its own idea, I would be like, you're better.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Agreed.
Even if it's going to be an adaptation of a book or something, or a manga or a comic, whatever, that no one's done yet, at least that would be something different.
And not just the American version of a Japanese
thing or
something before.
Like someone, not that I
We're talking
wanna,
take a book to a movie or something.
I don't want it to turn bad, but someone could do Saga. Saga's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just ideas for free.
Yeah. That is, it feels like one of those things that somebody should have done.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's in development somewhere. Right?
Somebody's doing it.
Isn't Brian K. Vaughan also, like, he was Runaways, and he's also Saga, or did I make that up?
Yes, okay. And I believe Why the Last Man is his, too, and that's being developed.
Well, there you go. So if Runaways does well, then they're gonna...
Yeah, supposedly you know. He was... Like, they asked him to help with Runaways, but mm-hmm. it was more just of a, like, courtesy thing, and, you know, they didn't know how much he'd want to be involved, and they moved in for a month. So, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But interesting, not... This isn't... does it count as a reboot? It's a sequel. It's just a 30-year later or whatever it is sequel.
Yeah, I mean, I think it counts as, like, we didn't have a new idea, so we're gonna do this again.
Yeah. Yes. So it's reboot-ish? Because Jurassic World isn't a reboot, but it's not really a sequel.
Right.
It's kind of both.
Yeah.
It works in both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not a... It's not a direct sequel, is what you would call it.
Right.
Whereas... coming out this weekend is Blade Runner 2049, which I guess really is just a direct sequel.
Yeah, though, you know, that one's literally a sequel.
Because they only said it when they needed to be able to put Harrison Ford in it, because obviously, you know, that's the only thing anybody knows about Blade Runner, because most people probably have never seen it, I bet. I actually didn't see it until I met Matt, because it's Matt's favorite movie.
Right.
So I only saw it 15 years ago.
Yeah, and I, like I think I said last time, have not seen it. So,
yeah.
I would have to watch it before I watch the
It's
sequel.
Not going to be for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. Mm-hmm. And I haven't read any of the reviews because I'm trying not to, because I've been told that the reviews are going to be spoilerific. Don't read them. But I have been told it's very slow, when I was like, well, but so was the first one.
Right.
So.
I guess it's like, if you liked the first one, then hopefully.
It's very cerebral. It's that kind of storytelling. Right. But Denis Villeneuve. However you say his name. Villeneuve, I think is how we say it.
Okay.
Anyway, he did Arrival, which is also, again, very
yeah.
cerebral
yeah.
science fiction storytelling. Mm-hmm. And apparently everybody's like, it's a masterpiece.
Oh, wow.
That if nothing else, somebody told me, you want to put every single frame on the wall. Like, frame it on the wall, because it's just
it looks really beautiful,
beautiful huh. to look at, if okay. nothing else. Okay. But the reviews have been so amazing that my husband, Mr. Blade Runner, there's only one Blade Runner movie, nothing else exists in this universe, mm-hmm. has gone from that mind point of, I'm never going to see this movie, to, so when can we go see this movie? Because the reviews are really good, and now I want to see it. I'm a little creeped out by that, but apparently
Well, that just
now...
shows you the power of Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I guess that, so.
This really is changing the industry, sometimes for the better.
Sometimes for the better. I think it's at 93%?
Okay.
Last I checked? Yeah. Something like this.
I am definitely, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to watch Blade Runner before the next podcast so that I can tell someone somewhere that I saw it and how I felt about it.
You can wait and see. Go see it with us. We're going to go to Chinese when it.
Well,
when
perfect.
We can, if you want to.
Yeah.
After I get back from New York Comic Con.
You mean the...
The new one.
The new one, yeah.
So see the first one.
I will watch the first one.
And then we can go see the... And then we can... In 2 weeks, because next week we're going to have a special podcast since I'm going to be out of town for New York Comic Con. But in 2 weeks, when we have, like, our regularly scheduled podcast, we can discuss it.
There you go.
We'll all have seen it. It'll be a week late, but that's okay, whatever.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And we'll just be late, like always. It's fine.
Yeah. So, kind of related to this, because... Well, sort of, kind of. There's, I've been seeing lots of stories going around about what it means that Marvel have just brought Wolverine back to the comics. He died in 2014, I think mm-hmm. it was. Because, you know, for those who don't know, and you should know, Marvel and Fox have not had a very good working relationship. And Fox are the ones who make all of the X-Men movies and the Fantastic Four movies. But it's not... Marvel Studios and Fox that have the bad relationship. Feige produced all of like the original X-Men movies before Marvel Studios happened. He has a good working relationship.
It's the comics.
It's Ike Perlmutter, and that and so like the television kind of. But there's all kinds of rumors about whether or not Perlmutter's even still involved. Mm-hmm. But it's his side, and he's apparently the one who was like, "Okay, we're killing the Fantastic Four. We're killing." We're not like they were. He's the reason that they stopped doing so much related to those in the comics.
Oh wow!
Because he had so much.
I didn't know he had control over the comics.
Yeah.
Apparently. Wow.
So there, like I said, there's rumors that he's not as involved anymore. As you know, even though he is still technically around,
mm-hmm.
that we just haven't been informed that he's not really involved.
Mm-hmm.
And several, or, well, 2 years ago, Fox and Marvel came up with the deal to allow Fox to create TV shows in the X-Men universe, because that was something that, Fox did not have the rights to. They only had the rights to making the movies. They can't even make merchandise for them.
Oh.
Yeah. Marvel have, and this is why you don't see tons of X-Men toys everywhere. Yeah. You see the maquettes for the comics, but you don't see, you know, little James McAvoy's toys, because Marvel have that power and they don't make them.
Wow.
Because they're not promoting Fox's movies.
That
so
sucks.
But they made a deal, Marvel and Fox, to allow the television shows, which is why we have Legion, which is why we have The Gifted coming up, and which is why there's another one, isn't there? I thought there was another.
I
think it was going to be New
recently.
Warriors, but then they moved the movie.
Yeah. No, but there's something else that came out recently. Or no, maybe it was just Inhumans.
Okay. I think they've been talking about another another Fox produced show. And those are made by Marvel Television. Which is interesting, because they're the ones controlled by Ike Perlmutter, not Kevin Feige. And so you'd think that seems weird. But what has been speculated ever since that happened is, what did Marvel get out of this deal? It makes no sense for them to just be like, sure, you can make these TV shows, when we know, even though they don't necessarily need the X-Men right now, that they want their characters back. So why would they let Fox make even more stuff with them? The only thing we've known for a while is that Marvel got the rights to Ego the Living Planet, which obviously we saw in Guardians 2.
Which there has to be other characters that come along with that.
But yeah, there's no way you traded, here, make as many X-Men TV shows as you want for Ego the Living Planet. As much as James Gunn says he was dependent on that character, I'm sure they could have been like, too bad, you have to do something else.
Right.
So, the speculation, because most people agree that the only thing that makes any sense is that they got Fantastic Four back. Because, obviously, Fantastic Four bombed dramatically for Fox.
Yeah, like, why would Fox even want it?
And they keep talking about making another one, but who wants that movie? What, the most recent one was, like, making them as babies or something? Like, little teeny kid versions of Fantastic Four? I know, it's like, what? I don't even know. But anyway, so the speculation has been that they did get the Fantastic Four back, but because Marvel don't need them right now, because they're kind of, like, they have a lot of shit going on.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's something like 26 featured characters in the next two Avengers movies that are not including the villains. Well, I guess it includes Loki, but not Thanos, I think, or something like that. Anyway.
But who thinks of Loki as a villain?
Yeah, he's not really. He's such a pitiful villain. But yeah, so the speculation has been that they got the Fantastic Four back, but agreed not to tell anybody yet, because they don't need them yet.
Right. Saving some face.
Yeah, so where this comes from, this whole conversation, is now because there is talk of resurrecting the Fantastic Four in the comics, it looks like that's happening, which everybody's like, that's because they got them back. Well, they've also just resurrected Wolverine in the comics. Now, everybody's speculating that this means Wolverine's going to be in, like, Avengers 4.
Right. But then that would mean, like, that would have to be, like, a very specific, because, like, they didn't give back the rights to X-Men overall, right?
Yeah.
So would they really give up...
I'm not going to say who, but somebody told me somebody in the know at another publication said that they think that they got back the original five X-Men. So it's Wolverine, Professor X, Magneto, X-Men. So Professor X, not Magneto. Cyclops, can't remember. Iceman.
Yeah. Jean Grey,
and Jean Grey, I guess? I
don't know who the originals are.
But that they're speculating that, which is crazy. Because I'm like, but why? And that they think that's why we're doing the Dark Phoenix saga and everybody's going to die or something in the next X-Men movie. Because then they're all going to go back and be in the MCU. Which I'm like, I feel like you're reaching here.
Yeah, that seems a little bit like a reach.
It makes more sense that the MCU would want the X-Men back than Fantastic Four right now, because they've kind of done it in Ultron, since they had Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, so they've sort of, and Inhumans obviously is not going well for them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, part of it is that one of the main villains in the Fantastic Four universe is the Skrulls, who we now have confirmed as being in Captain Marvel.
Oh. Okay.
And the Skrulls are the shapeshifters, like, they've replaced heroes in the MCU. But Marvel have said that the Skrulls were always something they had. Hmm. And so it's like, but their most, their main tie in the comics is the Fantastic Four.
Right.
So that's not to say you couldn't bring them over. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I think somebody apparently said something about really wanting to do Galactus and Silver Surfer, which obviously are Fantastic Four, and yeah, they don't have those.
Oh.
I'm imagining some, like, complicated color-coded document somewhere.
Yeah.
With, like, the list of, like, what character and who has what rights, and I don't know, it just sounds like such, like,
well, the worst
a
part
little
is...
child thing. Like, you can have this toy, and yeah. I get to keep this toy.
Yeah. Well, the worst part is seeing, like, half the time the director, I mean... Yeah, James Gunn said he wrote Guardians 2. He came up with the entire, like, the treatment, at least, for
Without.
Guardians 2. And then he found out they didn't have Ego, and he was like, well, shit. And
they should give all their writers the big, complicated,
yes,
you know, like,
exactly.
Document.
Yes. I don't think even they know, though, because half the time, because, like, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, they had to argue that.
Right.
Because Fox said, no, there are characters,
right.
They're X-Men, and Marvel said, no, they're Avengers, so they count as ours.
Right.
So then I think that's why... Because
there is overlap in all of them.
Yeah, that's why they agreed to kill off Quicksilver, mm-hmm. and that's why Scarlet Witch hasn't been introduced in X-Men films, because they were like, well, that's the easiest way to just kind of fudge it.
Right.
They get her, and, you know, Fox can have Quicksilver.
Right.
As Evan Peters, which, you know, everybody says he's always the best scenes. I thought he was the best one in Days of Future Past.
Yes.
That was a great scene. Mm-hmm. It felt like overkill and just like, really this again in
Apocalypse,
but that was a terrible movie anyway,
yeah.
So.
I mean, that's also kind of going on, though. They keep doing the same thing over again. So they're like, this scene was really cool in Days of Future Past, so we're going to do it again.
Yeah,
we'll,
right. Like, that worked
again. Like, it's cool the one time, but then.
Yeah, and so, like, the Wolverine thing, it ties back into somebody was, you know, was saying, I think it was Collider or Nerdist, where they had a story up of what this means for the MCU and how it could mean maybe they are getting mm-hmm. Wolverine back, in that Hugh Jackman has said he doesn't want to play Wolverine anymore unless he does it in an Avengers
right.
film. And it's not like Fox can actually, like, it wouldn't be easy for them to just give us a new Wolverine right now
right.
because everybody's so tied to Hugh Jackman. The problem in that logic is, well, yeah, but if you keep giving them more Hugh Jackman, especially if you then bring him into the event, the
then
MCU,
they're not
going to
come back to Fox
they're not,
for any reason.
Yeah, they're not going to have, mm-hmm. if they want to eventually recast Wolverine, they need to let him just be dead for a while and then, you know, wait at least 5 years
yeah.
and not use him, which, you know, Fox is going to have a hard time doing because they can't seem to do that with anything anyway.
That's
but then
true.
Again, I say this, Sony, or how many Spider-Mans have we had? I love Spider-Man, but it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
In a very short period.
I mean, I guess it just sort of like, it feels like unless you are Marvel, you should just not bother trying to make
everybody
Marvel
just let
happen.
Marvel make them the movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, Fox, just come back and say, you make better movies, make us money like you did for Sony with Spider-Man,
uh-huh.
and you can play with our toys.
There
and,
you go.
Or you can play with your toys that we just bought from you.
Right.
Because they really are Marvel's toys anyway. Because, I don't know. I'm not excited about Dark Phoenix. It's
no.
like, it feels too soon. It feels
is
like Batman vs. Superman.
Is
it's too
still
soon.
Going to be Sophie Turner as Jean
yes.
Grey? Well, then I'm happy for her.
I'm
and that is the extent of my
yeah.
feelings.
Yeah.
I saw, like, part of Apocalypse, and I was just like, I don't...
It's terrible.
Yeah, I don't want to.
And I love the first-class cast. Mm-hmm. I really like that cast. I mean, I think Jennifer Lawrence probably was not a good choice, mostly because now they've decided that it needs to be Jennifer Lawrence
yeah.
all the time.
Yeah.
And they don't want to have her in the blue makeup
right,
because...
Right, which is defeating the purpose.
Yeah. But I like most of that cast, so, you know, I'm still bitter that Bryan Singer came back. Sorry. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway...
I mean, I'm right there with you, though, that I don't think... I think that they would be better off introducing X-23 if they want to continue with Wolverine, even though it's, like, people are gonna... Well, they already have X-23,
yeah.
so just continue with her, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Than to bring back... Because people will have attachment to her from the Logan movie, because
yeah.
it was such a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the, like, bringing back Logan in any capacity just diminishes... the impact.
But I guess they have to wait another 10 years in the... Mm. Or 20, right? Because it's... If they do every 10 years in the movies, it's now the 90s is what we're about to see in Dark Phoenix.
Right, so they have to wait.
So we have to wait
bring her in.
To
yeah.
bring her in.
Unless, I don't know.
It's when... It's so far... It's in the future.
We don't... No, they have Deadpool, right?
Yes.
Which means, and they have Cable, obviously, because Cable's in the movie.
Yeah.
Cable's a time traveler, right?
Yes.
Can he just hop her back in the past?
Except that they're also bringing a different Colossus back to Dark Phoenix, I think it is.
Okay.
The Colossus that was in one of the other movies. So, it's not even the Colossus from Deadpool.
I see.
Is not going to be in the X-Men movies. So, like, they're not really... I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't
also,
know.
Also, what the fuck was Logan doing while the X-Men were going through this?
Yeah.
In the past. Like, he's just not there?
Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, bye!
Yeah.
Like,
he's how... burning somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how did his romance...
Is this when he's
Grey
at Alkali Lake,
this?
I guess?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. They're just always going to be like, yeah, too bad Wolverine couldn't be here.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, Lord.
So, yeah, I don't know. Everybody's speculating. I think this is what happens when we're so used to Marvel telling us, here's our next phase, mm-hmm. and now they're not telling us anything. Like, we don't know anything that comes out after, well, okay, after Avengers 4, mm-hmm. there's going to be another Doctor Strange movie. We know for sure the movie right afterwards is another Spider-Man movie. And that's all we know, right?
I mean, that's...
Because there was the Inhumans movie that's not happening, and that's good now. Because they've destroyed the Inhumans now. That's
so
fine.
Sad.
Apparently, Perlmutter was the one who liked the Inhumans. Feige never liked them.
Really?
So.
I mean, honestly, I don't like the Inhumans either. Like,
they're just a
issues.
Replacement for the X-Men.
Yeah. There's a couple of issues, like, or series that I do like just because they happen to have really good writers.
Mm-hmm.
Like the current Black Bolt by Salad and Ahmed. I'm like, oh, this is good.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't like the Inhumans as a concept. Like, it's literally, like, slavery. Like, anyone
yeah.
who's not an Inhuman gets to work in the mines. Like,
yeah.
So, and I'm supposed to root for these people. Like, what?
Yeah, apparently there's a lot of racism in those
yeah.
stories.
It's super ugly.
Yeah.
I really, and just in general, I hate it when you're supposed to be a metaphor for people who are different, and then the people who are different become the oppressors. And I'm like, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
You're just
going to say, it's like,
yeah.
yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, basically, it all comes down to everybody really just wants Marvel to tell us what's going to happen.
Yes.
Because we don't want to wait. Because we want to know now. So another reboot, though.
Yeah!
Although this is going back to what I was saying of the Americans just taking somebody else's thing and
right.
making it their own.
Right.
But yeah, the
so,
Good Doctor.
Yes, which I think I've brought up several times now. But now, since I forced Angela to watch it, since she is our resident K-drama expert, now we can compare the first episode of the Good Doctor American version to Good Doctor Korean drama.
I liked that it said in the credits it was based on a K-drama.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it did?
I knew it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice of them to say where they got it from, especially because they got so much of it.
I know. It's, like, literally.
Is it that, like...
It was so much that, like, when I... Because I haven't seen Good Doctor since it aired in, like, 2013. So then I watched the American one, and then I literally was like, is the music exactly the same at the beginning? And it's not.
but there was, like, parts of the dialogue, especially, like, in his, like, final speech and stuff, but I was literally oh wow, it's like someone literally watched the K-drama and was like, let's put that... Exactly. Yeah. Like,
that's just translated.
And then I didn't realize that Daniel Dae Kim is the executive producer of it. So then I was like, okay, that makes more sense.
Oh, that's
so, like,
cool.
I guess that... It's understandable now that he's like, I can make this palatable to American audiences, like I myself am palatable to American audiences.
I love him.
So, I've seen some people saying, like, it's kind of a shame that they didn't cast a, like, Korean-American actor.
That
yeah.
would have been
as
really cool.
Him.
For sure.
That
or at least
nice,
more
actually.
Korean, because I know it's like, you have to have a white man anchoring your show, otherwise people are not going to watch it. So, at least other characters. Some stuff.
It was pretty diverse. So
yeah,
well,
I mean,
thought,
definitely.
Because they were, like, because between the doctors and the board
mm-hmm.
of directors in the hospital, I actually
yeah.
thought it was pretty diverse.
Plus
cool.
Antonia Thomas and Nicholas Gonzalez as the members of the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it was, like, representative of the United
yeah.
States. So at least
yeah.
there's that.
No, it was pretty well done, but it
yeah.
was, yeah. The thing that I'm saddest about, I think, is just the losing the specific pediatrics angle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe, I mean, we've only seen one episode, so maybe it'll go there, but it was very clear from the beginning, like, because in this one, they're clearly just a general surgery department.
Right.
But in the K-drama, they were a pediatric surgery department, and at one point they tried to get him to move to general surgery or to radiology, and so he had this whole thing about, like, why it was so important to him
mm-hmm.
to do pediatrics specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that.
Yeah,
because
I feel like...
it informed
mm-hmm.
his character a lot.
Yeah. I feel like it makes more sense to stick with pediatrics, and I don't know if they're just going to take the cases from the drama, then they will just by accident do that. But even
what makes me nervous is that they changed it. If they're gonna, that means they're gonna kill more of their patients,
right?
Because in the, you were always safe, kind of, in the cage. Nobody
wants to see lots of kids die.
Right.
That's how
right.
Maybe
they lost
long.
One patient over the course of the entire drama.
Well,
I
would
think.
Say, there you go. Anytime they bring in an adult patient, you're like, well, that one's dying. But anytime there's a kid, they'll save the kid. Especially.
The big question now is, since they're doing word for word, is there going to be a wolf girl? Or...
I have not seen the wolf girl. You
inquiring
have to tell me
minds
girl.
Want to know.
What is the wolf girl? Does she think she's a wolf?
She was raised by wolves. I mean,
she's literally
little, so
raised
she's just,
by wolves? Okay.
Yeah, feral is probably a better word.
All right, all right.
I mean, again, I've only watched, I think, rewatched the first two episodes, so okay. I don't remember specifics now. If they thought she was literally raised by, they call her the wolf girl, they absolutely do, because I've seen other people talking about it.
Well, awesome. Well, I hope that they include
kind of
that.
Raised in the woods or whatever, she growls at people and bites them.
I think one way in which you're safe is that the drama, even in the American version, is predicated on he can't mess up in a way that hurts the hospital, or else they'll get rid of him. So,
and they really, I mean, already made him behave a lot better than the Korean character did. In the first, is it the first or second episode that in the Korean version that he, like...
In the Korean version, in the second episode, he freaks out during the surgery, like he can't perform the surgery, which he already did without their permission. That was the problem. Right?
Yeah. Which is the one where he, like, that's the one where, he, like, breaks into the surgery, the OR, basically, Like, he, like, forces his way into the ER to do the surgery, and then, freaks out and can't do it. Which, in some ways, I liked better in the K-drama because it gave more excuse for the board not wanting to hire him, based on the things that they were saying, that he wouldn't be competent or whatever.
Right. Well, maybe, I'm sure we'll see something like that in the second episode of the American version, which, I don't know, because it's like, the first episode is like, oh, well, we have to have a reason to want to hire him, and then we have to have reasons why it's like, see, we shouldn't have done that. So...
I know you said you were worried that, like, the K-drama was a little ableist, and you were worried about them bringing that into this... Is that look like it's a problem, or...
Not as much.
Yeah, because they're not talking about... In the K-drama, they talk about how he's cured, or how he's on his way to being cured, which is not possible, as we know. and they don't say that in the American version.
Okay, that's good.
But instead, the doctor guy, whose name I cannot remember... older
the
doctor...
The boring older one,
The boring older doctor... The father figure is talking about how, like... You know, in the past, we wouldn't have let women in, or we wouldn't have let black doctors in, because we see things as a weakness, or as a... We see things, whatever, that are not, actually. So I want to show that his savant syndrome, at least, is actually a strength.
Yeah. That was the only... Like, that was the only thing that seemed ableist, because at least in the Korean drama they had, in the very first episode, him doing stuff that wouldn't be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but you're saying, like, because they are just assuming that he won't have, that he'll have an issue, right?
The American one, like, they're all like, he couldn't be a doctor, or whatever, but they don't, like, I don't feel like they have as much justification for it.
Right, I think that
based
that's...
Based on, like, what they show the character doing.
Right, I feel like that's something that we can see in future episodes. Is that what the show feels, or is that what the doctors feel? Because it's like, if we're seeing that he actually has what it takes, and they're actually showing that, and it's the doctors who are being ableist... then it's not the show being ableist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As opposed to the show...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense to have people in the world have that prejudice.
Yes.
Because you would. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so it makes sense to have that shown.
And I thought...
Just don't have that... Okay, but that's...
Right.
You have to have people rebut that.
Exactly.
Basically.
When he did a really... That was at the end of the episode when Freddie Highmore's character is talking to the, like, doctor that he's going to work under. Mm-hmm. And he, like, really kind of burned him without... actively burning him. It was a really good show. Well, when the guy, he was like, when the doctor was like, all you're ever going to do is do suction, or whatever, like, in my OR, like, you're only ever going to do this one thing, and that doctor, and then Freddie Highmore character was like, you're a really good doctor, you're better than everybody I ever worked under, and so that looks like a compliment, and then he's like, you're also very arrogant. He's like, does that help you be a good doctor? And then he's like, does it help you as a person?
Nice. Oh,
sorry. But yeah. Yeah, I definitely liked that. Although the ending was, like you mentioned, it was super abrupt. Like, it just ended after that.
Yeah, he said that, and then boom,
and
then.
I was like, and that was the end of the episode.
Oh, that's awkward.
Yeah, I was okay. It feels like something else should have happened there. But one thing that I really liked in the K-drama is that you see other members of the hospital, other doctors, like, especially the love interest, Minchae's character, whose name I cannot currently remember, and the nurse, who both, like, sort of immediately take the main character's side and, like, want to help him.
Both in the nurses do in the K-drama.
Yeah. So, like, they're immediately like, yes, no, he's doing the right thing, and we want to, you know, we want to follow that. And I think that helped juxtapose with the board that was super ableist. And
well, and the board as well, like, it was a little bit more clear in the K-drama that they're, like, they agreed to let him do it because that president put his job on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that in the American one as well, and they kind of talked about how, like, because his daughter character was kind of like, they're out for your job or whatever, but in the K-drama, I think, too, you just go along with it in the K-drama, because you're like, there's going to be, like, tons of boardroom machinations.
Mm-hmm.
That's what K-dramas do. So, like, I wonder how much they're going to go with that in the American one.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, so far, it seems like we saw less of the board than we have in the than we did in the K-drama, but... We don't know how that's going to balance
out. It's been
out.
One episode.
Exactly. It's just been one episode. But one thing I really liked about the American version was the trajectory that Antonia Thomas's character was on. Claire is her name in the American version. Just from that one episode, I actually see a lot of her as a doctor on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, some little inklings of, like, what is wrong with her romantic life currently. you know, and how that might change later.
Uh-huh.
But especially I liked... that she was distrustful of Freddie Highmore, the good doctor. I don't know his name.
Sean,
thank you. Oh, Sean at first, because he was just like, he couldn't tell her what was wrong or why it was wrong. Mm-hmm. So then she was like, okay, that doesn't make sense. But then afterwards, she's like, wait a second. I think he might have a point, to the point that then she actually starts trusting him and wanting to reach out to him. And yeah, there was, like, this one scene that I really loved, and I'm sure it was in the trailer, and it's so cheesy, but it's, like, when she goes to talk to him near the end, and he's, like, not answering her questions, obviously. And then finally he's like, I have a question, and then he's like, when you first met me, you weren't nice to me, and then you started being nice, and now you want to be my friend, so each time was pretend.
Oh, I was like, snap.
I was like, that's so good.
So basically, it might be fun to watch just because, like, he's real. Like,
yeah.
He's not going through social niceties.
Right.
It's, yeah. Sometimes that can be refreshing.
Yeah.
Although sometimes it can also be a pain in the ass. So,
right.
Yeah.
I guess it's more of a question of, like, are they going to really delve into autism as, and how people actually function with it, or how one person would, because, like, they say you meet one person with autism and you've met one person with autism.
Yeah.
Or are they going to just treat it like, oh, he's Sheldon. Yeah. He's, like, a nicer Sheldon, which would suck.
Nobody's going to want to watch that show.
Right.
Or
yeah, know. Like, even in the K-drama, it was kind of, like, trying to show the ways in which he was not autistic, or, like, normal, quotes.
Right.
Around that word, which was then weird, and they even, because, like, as I've been going back and watching it, and I sent you, Tatiana, the thing, like, all of the English translation summaries of that show, of the K-drama Good Doctor, are, like, describe him as, like, mentally and emotionally, like, 20 years younger than everybody around him.
Yeah.
And then
really
they put the romance in the show, and then I'm like, oh, this is wrong on so many, every level.
Yeah.
So hopefully that is not something they do.
Right, I hope it's not.
But this, and it doesn't look like that's where they're going with
right.
this either.
So far, it doesn't seem like he's childish. Like, they don't treat him like he's childish. It's just like, it's like there's like a barrier to communication.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think...
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
That's not so bad.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I told Angela this too in when we were emailing about it, but it's just funny to me, because not that Simon Bellamy on Misfits was autistic or necessarily meant to be autistic, but it was another romance that started off with... Antonia Thomas playing against someone that she had trouble communicating with, right? Like, Simon. Apparently, like, all the main characters are British, but they're talking in American accents.
Isn't that,
except
like,
for the one guy, the boy toy.
Yeah, the boy toy. Who actually gets to be British. Because he's a dick!
Because obviously he has to be an asshole. He has to be British. There you go. That
and
makes sense.
The British accent just always gives you the edge.
Yeah. It does make it, if you're a villain, it's worse if you're a British villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. Still see them as our oppressors.
It's because we've made all the Nazis sound British, so... Oh yeah, because we can't... German just sounds too funny to us, so we make them sound British
there
instead, and I think that's what one it is. We think British is also German Nazi.
I did an article for this site too.
There you go, you did.
Why all of our foreign accents are British.
Yes.
In America.
It's a good article. Read it.
I'm gonna read it now. Yeah.
It's been getting a lot bunch of hits again recently, I noticed.
Really?
So yeah.
Wow.
Once in a while it pops back up into like the top. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway. So would you guys recommend it then?
If you want to watch a medical procedural.
Yeah, only been one episode, but I'm still talking about it. Yeah. So clearly I feel like
we have drama comparison investment in there too. I would not recommend this to somebody who doesn't want to watch a medical show.
Right, yeah. No, for sure. It's because it's definitely gonna be mostly about the
medicine. You like ER,
And if you're like, I want a more low-key Grey's Anatomy that only has, like, maybe two relationships that I'm going to have to invest in, and probably none of the main characters will die. I don't know, but it'll probably take a few seasons. And then you can check out, if it even lasts that long, right?
Yeah. I think it did well.
Yeah, right? It did. It had a good opening.
Yeah.
It definitely did well for ABC.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
ABC need that right now. Sorry, Inhumans.
Oh my god.
Apparently it didn't do nearly as bad Inhumans as they thought it would.
Oh really? Like I heard like a 0.8 or something, right? Like 0.8, 0.9?
In 18 to 49.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think it was about 3 million, which is about what, yeah. That's not good.
I mean, I guess it's like what S.H.I.E.L.D. does, but S.H.I.E.L.D. is in season 5, so.
Yeah.
You don't want to start that way.
Yeah, starting that way is bad. Which is why I saw a story the other day of Scott Buck talking about apparently his like future plans for the show, and I snorted because I was like, you're not gonna get it, sorry.
Yeah. And even if they had a planned future for the show, it wouldn't be with Scott Buck.
No,
they would be like, hopefully, all right.
Well, you hope not. I don't know, it could be, but we hope not. So Angela, I'll let you take, you wanted to talk about The Good Place.
Yes.
Another good.
I don't think I have anything coherent to say.
I feel. Matt and I finished watching this week's episode, and we were like, what the hell just happened?
I got John to say this is a good show, and John is, like, so laconic.
Oh, really? Like,
and he will sit there placidly watch anything that I make him watch, but for him, John saying something is good is, like, an effusive recommendation from somebody else. So he's like, yeah. Like, he watched Parks and Rec with me, for example. But, I mean, he's like, yeah, it's funny, it's whatever, but, like, John's, I think he likes it so much because he's a plot person as well. So, I mean, I've been seeing a lot of people drawing the comparisons to Community's Fake Clip Show, and that's what instantly reminded me of, because my friend was complaining, she's like, I wanted to see more of this, I wanted to see more of that, and I'm like, I know, that's how I felt about Community's Fake Clip Show episode.
That's funny.
I'm done. I mean, I have some speculations, but I'm just totally ready to let things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because I feel like I'm not gonna.
I'm super surprised that that the first two episodes were just, like, going through, like, all these iterations.
Yeah. And it was just so fast. It was like, wow, okay, I feel like that should have taken a season or, like, half a season.
Right.
But, I mean, it would have gotten old and repetitive. Right. So, it is refreshing that they were just, no, we know this would get old, so we're going to give you what we need to get you to see what the issues are that they've got to fight, like, get through now. And here's
our
next
plan. I just don't know how, it was a bit slower in the first season.
Yeah.
You know, like how are they going to keep up this pace?
I think it's now it's like they have a set plan. Because it's the first episode, it took almost the whole episode to go through one iteration.
Yeah.
And then the next episode, they were like, here's all the different possibilities. But now we've ended with, like, Vicky's basically the new big bad, if you will, right?
Yeah.
For Michael, anyway. So if Michael's going to side with them, then suddenly you've got a whole different trajectory for the rest of the season.
My friend and I have been speculating about Janet a lot. Because I was like, Janet seems to be the key in all these times that Eleanor figures it out, right? Because Janet's the one who's always introducing Eleanor to cheating. Yeah. And I was like, if I was Michael, I would just, like, put Janet away.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like, maybe he can.
Yeah, I think it's like she's not above him, but it's like she answers to something above
him. But it can't be too direct. Because if it's too direct, because he said in the first season that he stole a good place, Janet. And we saw a bad place, Janet, in the second season, or in the first season, and he can't use a bad place, Janet, in the good place, because she would give it away, because it's not how she's programmed.
Right.
But if it was too direct, like, somebody would be looking Primark stole from Janet.
Right.
But it just, the implication is that maybe both The Good Place and The Bad Place, part of their whole framework or their mainframe, Janet's part of it. You cannot exist without it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why, and that's also why maybe Janet, although she's not consciously doing anything, if she's a stolen Good Place Janet, that she's inherently programmed to be good. So she's inherently going to help them, and that's always going to give them what they need, even if they don't realize it's what they need. Because she's the one taking her to the... Because the medium place, I wasn't sure if that was, like, a ploy from season one, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like.
Janet is always helping them.
And Michael doesn't seem to be... And she's like, Michael might not be able to leave either, because I was like, why hasn't Michael gone after them to the medium place?
Right, yeah.
All of these times. Yeah. It would have had to eventually figure out that they're going there.
Someone said, I can't remember who it was, like, what if this is... Maybe it was in the show itself. No, no. But someone was like, what if this is Michael's bad place?
It was one of the plans that Eleanor read that she had, is make Michael think he was in the good place.
But what if it is actually, for reals?
Yeah, I believe it.
It would make sense. Because this is sure, definitely torturing him.
Right. Like,
and he obviously has no control over Janet.
Yeah.
Like, he has to have her there.
Mm-hmm.
He can reboot her.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't stop her from being part of it. There has to be a Janet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, because I just feel like...
And he has
like,
to deal with the other people.
At this, right, the idea that no one has gone to, I can't remember the name of the boss.
I don't either.
But
Sean. Also Sean.
I just can't remember the name Sean.
Apparently.
If your name is Sean, I can't remember you. So, Vicky threatened to go to Sean, but, like, no one else in, like, 600
you
iterations has
would.
Not gone to Sean.
Yeah.
And Sean hasn't checked in on him. I don't know. It's suspicious.
Yeah. Michael's been reporting in that everything's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
But, and no one's, yeah, like... Like, what is the evidence he's giving that things are fine?
Yeah, I'm surprised, like, the biter guy hasn't gone to Sean.
I know, because he really wants the biting.
Yeah.
You'd think if nobody else, he would definitely do it. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, maybe they think that they all be in trouble at this point.
Maybe.
Because they didn't go to one sooner.
For going along with it, yeah.
But that is a good argument for it being Michael's bad place, too.
Yeah.
I was reading one review today, I think it was Vox's review, was talking about C.S. Lewis's The Great Divorce, which is about heaven, hell, and purgatory.
Oh, okay.
And I have not read it in many years. But it was interesting because it was comparing, like, how you kind of have to live with what you have. And that's how I kind of feel about, like, if I were in the good place and I found out that it was actually the bad place, I might just... But Eleanor, like, confronts Michael every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, eh. I mean, it's better than, like,
what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's not... I mean, it's torture. I get that it's supposed to be torture, and it would get annoying, but it's still... You got a comfy bed. You're not being, like, having screws or, like, your parts chopped off or whatever.
You still don't have to work. I mean, it's still better than Earth.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
definitely.
You just have to deal with stampeding giant giraffes every once in a while.
Right. And then it's, like... It's funny, though, because, like, these people are meant to torture them, but they always end up forming close bonds or actually helping each other.
We all found out. I was surprised at the end of episode 2 when Eleanor was going to confront Michael after all.
Mm-hmm.
And it made sense because, Michael was going to come to propose the parlay with them or whatever. So it would have happened regardless. But I was thinking, like, Eleanor was going to tell everybody and they were just going to, like...
Pretend.
Not tell Michael
and
pretend for a while. Because I'm like, coast on with your still pretty cushy life.
But I guess they didn't know that this was the last attempt, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're still thinking, like, it's this, or we get out, and somehow we make it to the good place, I guess. I don't know what you're expecting.
Yeah.
As opposed to thinking, well, if we confront him, we're gonna all go to real hell. Which would be no good.
Or Adam Scott's gonna torture you.
Adam Scott, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I just want to say that I love Michael Shore. I don't know. I just love everything. Because, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine just came back, too, and so far the season's off to a good start.
I haven't gotten to watch it. I have to wait a week.
Oh, no, why?
Because I don't have cable.
Aww.
That's tragic. Well, it was a really good, it was a really strong start to the season. And I just love that his shows, like, the humor really comes from, you know what this character is like. And so how this specific character would react to that situation is what's funny, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like a way of playing on, not stereotypes, but just, like, tropes for characters. And then making that into a real person, rather than just feeling like a character.
And that's kind of where, like, The Good Place is sort of the thing that combines everything that Michael Schur was great about before mm-hmm. with really great plot. Because this is, like, this is me versus John. I don't really care about plot if the character development is really great.
Mm-hmm.
Because I fall in love with these characters, and I would sit there and watch them weave baskets. Like, I don't care.
Right.
I just want to see them hang out.
Yeah.
Which is kind of how Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Parks and Rec were, and you have that with Good Place, but you also have this, like, insane plot on top of it.
Right.
I think I read an interview with the actress who plays Janet, and she's like, I went into the writer's room once, and it looked like that scene out of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. There is no Diane for a counting scene. She's like, it was
That's awesome.
I'm the opposite. I need good characters, but I need the plot to kind of be solid. Most of the time. I was a Glee fan, so not
That's right.
obviously not there, maybe.
That one, the characters overrode the plot for you.
I guess I get obsessed either with characters, and that's why I watch, so maybe I'm both. Mm-hmm. Or I get, like, crazy into the plot, and I don't care. Like, I love Westworld because that plot is insane. I'm not attached to any one character on that show. It's completely about how crazy. And I feel like the same thing is with The Good Place. I like the plot. I like the story. I'm not really attached to any of the characters. Mm. They don't really mean that much to me. Except that
how
I love
rude.
Kristen Bell.
No,
just
Yeah, Kristen
My
Bell's
friend
great.
And I, like, we have to see the guy who plays Jason in a rom-com sometimes, too.
Yes.
Like, it's when
hilarious.
We go back and rewatch season one, we're like, until he opens his mouth, he's so attractive.
Until he
opens his mouth, and you're like, but that's, like, acting, right?
Yeah.
Even in this most recent episode, the time that Jason figures it out.
Yeah,
and
that was great.
Like, Jason figures out, and he gives this big, beaming smile, and I'm like, I would be a little blinded by this, but then it's still so Jason-y, and I'm like, no.
That was fun. It was like,
Jason.
Wait, Jason figured it out?
Yeah. Which, by the way, Jason and Janet as, like,
I want them back! How come they haven't hooked up again?
They kind of, wasn't they, like, sort of, like, hugged? They had, like, a really cute moment in the premiere, I think.
Yeah,
but
they did. I'm like,
I'm sure they'll come back. But yeah, they're very cute. It's just so funny because it's like, in any other situation or show or movie, you'd just be like, it's a robot. Like, I don't.
Yeah. It would be gross.
Yeah, it's like totally it would be like her. Like, what is happening? But now, but it's just very cute and innocent. So.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah,
I think it's the only comedy on American television I watch right now, and I just like it's so nice because it's just refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially because I think the other day we watched it right after watching Mr. Mercedes, which, like, man, the juxtaposition of those two shows. I needed that lighthearted, happy moment. Yeah. Anyway,
I think we're good placed.
Okay. All right. So next up, we're going to switch gears and go to our final Versailles interview. And as I said earlier, this is a new character who's being introduced in the second episode of season two. She's Princess Palatine, and, well, let's just say she has a very, very interesting introduction in the, like, when you meet her. I just think you're going to love her right away, because I just did. But, you know, it's a very interesting introduction. Anyway, here's my interview with Jessica Clark from Princess Palatine from Versailles.
If you can start by introducing yourself and your character a little bit, give us a little background on her.
Yeah,
that'd
sure.
be great.
So my name is Jessica Clark, and I play Princess Palatine, and she is a German princess come over from Germany to marry Louis the 14th's gay brother and entering into the whirlwind of Versailles.
That's a great way to describe her. I feel bad saying this with them, all of them sitting over there. But as much as I love the first series, it did feel like there was something a little bit missing.
Okay.
And then when you were introduced, I was like, that's what it was.
Oh.
But she's kind of a breath of
you
fresh air. So can you just talk about introducing her as that kind of fish out of water character and then getting to play that role in the opulence of Versailles?
Yeah, so I mean, when I got the script of the first scene, which is her on the bridge, mm-hmm. relieving herself, and then walking up and saying hello to her husband that she hasn't even met yet. That's the scene I had for the audition.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading it for the first time and thinking, wow, this woman is quite something. And then, obviously, when I got the job, I did a bit more research into her and what she was like and read some of her letters. And I thought, this woman is a force of nature in that world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really exciting for me to be able to play a character like that. Like, it's sometimes quite rare that, as a woman especially, that characters like that come along and you get that opportunity. So I was like, yes, I'm diving in. But I don't know if you're on the panel, but I said earlier about fact that for her, obviously she's never been to Versailles before. She's a real fish out of water. She doesn't know what to expect. She doesn't know whether she's going to be welcomed. I mean, she's going to stay true to herself and she's going to hope they welcome her. And if they don't, well, then she'll just get on with it. But I think for me, there was almost the opposite. It was like a sense of, yeah, I've never been to Versailles before, and then I've never been on this set before, and I really hope they welcome me and they're nice to me. And unlike Palatine, everyone was so super nice, which was amazing, and welcomed me, like, so with just the openest of arms. Unlike that first scene where you see Palatine at the banquet, she's eating the the green pastry and talking to Chevalier, and there's that sense of everyone judging her and not really knowing who she is or like why she's here. Like, she doesn't fit in. She's not Versailles enough. It wasn't like that at all for me on set, which was really nice.
That's great. So she is a fish out of water, but she has a confidence that, you know, you wouldn't expect from most women, especially at this time, perhaps.
Yeah.
And especially she's really blunt with Chevalier when she meets him about their positions in the court. Can you just talk about that a little bit more and the struggle she has with him and developing a relationship with her husband?
With no spoilers.
Yes, the fun part.
Yeah, I know. Try to hold back, but give you something. she knows from very early on that she's coming into a marriage with a man who she's not necessarily going to be his type, and that she is willing to, I think she's really willing from really early on to be friends with Chevalier and to form a bond to make life easier. And so I think from that moment where they first meet each other and he gives her attitude and wants to kind of fight up against her, she realizes it's going to be more of a struggle than she thought it was going to be. But I think the fact that she is so honest and the fact that she is so true to herself means that she just has to find ways of maneuvering these people and figuring out ways of like almost breaking them down and making them realize that she's not there to destroy them and she's not there to make their lives any more difficult. She actually just wants everyone to have an easier life. And so what I love throughout season two is the development of the relationship between her and Chevalier and how that changes and how that develops in many ways. And that was a real joy to, well, it was a joy to work with Evan Williams because he's amazing, but it was also a joy to find that like relationship developing. And there's a scene in, I think it's episode 7, between her and Chevalier, between Palatine and Chevalier, where you see how vulnerable they both are, and you see them both as human beings, her trying to connect with him, and it was just a lovely scene to play, and I think a slight sort of moment of change within their relationship, so it's really nice to have that develop and change, and then potentially even into season 3, but who knows?
You're filming that now?
Correct. Filming that now, yeah. We're about halfway through season 3 now. So we've got another like 2.5 months to go, which is kind of crazy when you're doing
press
for season 2.
When did it
end? You're like, and it aired in Britain, in France, like months ago.
Yeah.
And Britain about 2 months ago. So it's kind of amazing that there's a whole group of people in America who haven't seen it yet, you know? And then you're like, please like me. I hope you like me.
It's going to be hard to keep track of where you are when you're, especially because you're probably doing press a little bit over there for season 3.
So trying to kind of keep a head in where you're at, both in filming and then trying to talk about the show and then also not give any spoilers. Never give spoilers.
Speaking of spoilers, so we've been given the first 3 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
But the clip that they showed in the panel today was obviously from the future because it's not something I've seen before.
It was.
So it was a really interesting glimpse at her because it is just her saying straight out that, you know, she came here to have kids and she's not getting them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but as I understand, her relationship with
Philippe with her husband does develop over the season. So can you talk about where they go a little bit without giving more spoilers?
I can try to see what I can do. So I think she knows when she arrives. I mean, it was a completely different era, you know, a completely different part of history where they would know that they had certain duties they had to fulfill. And I mean, it's an arranged marriage, right? She's never met him, but she does it with aplomb. And so there's that sense of knowing that they're going to have children. They're married, and the next thing you do is, you know, you consummate the marriage and then you have kids. And so I think there's a trepidation about it because it's scary for her. She's never, like, had sex before, and it's like a whole new... And she wants to succeed in that. She wants to do her duty and succeed. So I think that, yeah, I think there's that sense of duty that she comes in with when she comes into this marriage. And she kind of, it's that sort of knee slapping, like, we can just do this, we've got to get on. I know that you don't fancy women, but you've had children before with your previous wife. You know, I think we can make this work. And then obviously when there's the bedding ceremony and things go a bit awry, she's not really expecting that. And I think that throws a big spanner in the works, and she's then got to work out how she can maneuver this new situation, and also like learn about him and figure out what he needs, and how he needs to be played in a way, but also how that if she is open and honest with him, and he can then only be open and honest with her. So it was really. It was so much fun working with Alex, and it was really amazing to see how that relationship develops and how they learn from each other. And what's amazing is that they were really close. They had three kids. I mean, one died really when he was sort of very young, but they had a really up until a point. There was a point where there was a rift, like, driven between them, but they had a really good relationship. You know, they both knew what each other needed, and they knew how to make their lives work within Versailles and have a happy relationship, you know, without sex or with dutiful sex.
So you mentioned the kids, and the Royal Palatine had a very good relationship even with his previous children. Yes. Correct? But there hasn't been, you know, it is a pretty raunchy show. There's not a lot of focus on
the children in the series. They're talked about. You see, yes, the Dauphin a little bit, but for the most part, they're born, they're gone.
Mm-hmm. Will we see her develop that relationship at all with those children?
So many spoilers. So, I mean, historically, no children were allowed in Versailles. Mm-hmm. So as soon as children were born, they were, you know, sent away. So I think they wanted to keep that sense of no children really being within the palace. I don't know how to say it without just giving massive spoilers. You'll have to watch season two, and then you'll have to watch even into season three, dare I say.
Because I guess it gives away whether or not they leave Versailles, because everybody's kind of stuck there.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, the plot of season two. Mm-hmm. And what that happens there.
Yeah.
So much of her story right now is based in her relationship specifically with Philippe and with Chevalier. Mm-hmm. But there is this whole court intrigue going on. I mean, it's any court. There is always going to be that, but there's the poisonings happening.
Oh, yeah.
Do we see her involved in that story at all?
Oh, I'm just asking for spoilers. Left and right, right?
So yeah, I think within like a huge palace, but actually a relatively close-knit palace, they're all going to get interwoven into all of that world. The poisons is such a scary thing for all of the people in the palace, and so I think that can only like drip into everyone's experience of living there, even if it's just through the fear of being potentially poisoned or the fear of somebody else you know potentially, you know, suffering. So I think there's no way of escaping something that dark and that scary within the world, really.
Especially in such a close-knit group.
Especially,
there,
yeah,
are a
exactly
lot of nobles, but still they're all stuck in the palace.
Yeah, exactly. And the gossip is so rife within Versailles, and, you know, with days spent, like, basically eating or gambling or drinking, there's only so much you can do to not gossip about the goings-on within the palace, you know?
Mm-hmm. And in fact, actually, one of the last scenes that we see of her in the third episode, which is what I had seen,
oh, yeah,
was her being approached by Montespan. And
yeah,
being, talking about how she's not really a gossiper.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm guessing she has to learn that part.
Well, I think it's definitely been a theme throughout season two and also actually in season three of the sense that Palatine isn't really a gossip. She's not very good at it. She doesn't really like it. She doesn't like the thought of, like, hurting people and, you know, talking behind people's backs. In her letters, she was quite rude and I was about to say bitchy. Yeah, she was quite bitchy because she really despised Madame de Maintenon, who's a new character that you may have seen in episode three.
Mm-hmm.
So that she develops as well. And historically, her and Palatine really didn't get on, or Palatine really didn't like her. And so she's very... she's very unpleasant in her letters about her, but it feels like she would never... that's very much a safe space for her, mm-hmm, to send away back to her family about her struggles within the palace. It never, for me, felt like she was a huge part of that gossip. But then it's Versailles. There's only so much you can do to not be intrigued by, you know, snippets of information. And so, yeah, there's definitely some intrigue to be had within season two and into season three.
Kind of an aside, it's interesting that this season has put so much more of a focus on the women than the first season did.
Yeah.
And the part that they played. And I'm sure you're not aware of this, but the last few days, you know, we've been sitting through lots of panels. There's actually been a lot more emphasis put on women. We've had several panels where it's just the women of the show. And that's part of, I think, a bigger discussion that's going on.
Yeah,
in totally. Hollywood, the same with people of color being represented.
Yeah,
more.
Totally.
I know you're a relative newcomer, but how are you seeing that play out in the world of entertainment?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like there's been a huge surge in, like, feminism and women's rights and people talking about it more. And the wage, wanting to make sure that women and men are paid the same for doing essentially the same job, like Robin Wright recently, you know, with House of Cards, and it feels like there is a change happening. It feels like there is, we're talking about it. It's something that's being addressed and being thought about, which is a step in the right direction. I still feel like we have a long way to go. I still feel like it's not like 2017, everyone's equal. But I feel like we're making really small steps in the right direction. And I think it's going to be a long time. I mean, I feel positive about it, but I do think it's going to be a while. Because it's so bedded into who we are and our society and how people are brought up and how we've been, like, people of colour and also women and disabled, like, transgender, have been oppressed for so long, it feeds into people's psyches and it feeds into how we just live our lives from day to day. And there's, like, subconscious things that we do and behaviours that we have that we don't even realise because it's, you know, years and years of what society has taught us. So I think it does feel really positive, and being part of a panel of really strong, brilliant women working on a show, and the fact that you're saying there's, like, other panels where it's the same thing, is really beautiful and really exciting to be part of that. Mm-hmm. And I only just hope that it keeps continuing along the same path.
Fantastic. Great. We're done.
Gotta go.
Okay, so thank you for joining us. Next week, we're going to have a special episode because I'm going to be at New York Comic Con. So these two ladies, and maybe somebody will be joining us, they're going to talk about K-dramas. They're just going to talk to their heart's content because obviously they love their K-dramas. So I'm just going to let them go crazy and talk to you about your K-dramas.
Without her having to listen.
Well, yeah, and then I can listen and make my list of what I have to, like, so you can basically make the entire episode talking to me and telling me this is your list of things you have to watch. There you go. And then we'll be back in 2 weeks with another regular podcast, and that'll probably be a lot of New York Comic Con. Right now, we don't have a lot confirmed. There's a lot of invites, but, you know, they always confirm you at the last minute. The only thing we know right now for sure we have is S.H.I.E.L.D. So
send in those questions.
Be looking for, yeah, if you have questions, please tell me. And look for those interviews coming up soon. All right, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.